listening to that buttery smooth fade.
That was pretty good.
Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, manning up, or, yeah.
Like, yes, the ice beard.
I just realized, like, that was quite misogynistic of me to say that.
Right,
female
right.
Listeners, I am sorry. I can only transcend my gender so much.
Mustering courage.
There you
mustering
go.
Mustering the
Thank
will
you.
To Thank overcome you. Adversity. Yeah. Just like John Malkovich.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy.
Who incidentally does a mean cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Apparently, yeah, which you were just playing for me, which I have never seen before.
No, me neither. I
did not know he was a musician. Yeah, well done. Thank you for sharing that. I am a better man for that.
I think we both are. Yeah.
Probably so. And you, whatever your gender may be, would be a better person if you, in fact, checked that out. We will probably put a link to that.
Yeah, why not?
On the internet, yeah.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, we can,
yeah.
So we had a fabulous weekend, and I think I just said to you, shit, what a weekend.
Yeah.
And you said, holy shit, trademark.
Trademark.
And agreed.
And yes.
Yeah. We had a lot of stuff going on.
It was, I can't believe it's only Monday right now, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like it should be Monday a week from today.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, let's just make a list. You and I went to see some friends, Brown Bear, Brown Bear. They played at Biddy's Pub over.
Oh, holy
Mason.
Shit.
Yes.
Our weekend started early. Yeah, that was Thursday night.
Right after work.
No, that was Friday night.
That was Friday night, yeah.
But Thursday night.
But it felt like Thursday night.
No, Thursday night was Tango Alpha Tango.
Oh, that's
our
right.
Our weekend did start early.
Oh, so we did. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. We were out late for music. Then we went out earlier for music. Let's see. And then after that, the Midnight Mystery Ride, which was a good time.
Yes.
And then the next day, let's see, what happened the next day?
You were hungover and yes. I was really tired.
Yes.
I was the sober equivalent of hungover.
Right. And then that evening we went to Film Festival.
Yeah, we still went out.
Yeah, yeah. And then Sunday morning I went and participated in the video shoot that Film by Bike was doing with the Portland Timbers
right.
people.
Right.
Yeah.
And I worked.
Yes. And now here we are. So big weekend. Anyways, now that we've enumerated those, maybe let's talk about the Bicycle Film Festival. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. So it's been going on for how long?
It's been around for a while, and I'm trying to remember just as far. It's been around at least 10 years. I think it started around 2001.
Okay.
And it has been to Portland before, but it hasn't been in Portland for several years. And I can't remember the reasons for that, other than we do have our own homegrown film festival called Film by Bike, which I was on the jury for, which is coming up in about a month.
Oh, and incidentally, that same day was the Milwaukee Bike Film Festival.
Oh, right, yeah. So anyone who was going to come up for the Bike Film Festival may have actually been down in Milwaukee instead. Viewing,
right.
Yeah. Were those Milwaukee-specific films, or were they?
No, but they were more local. There was like a little small thing that Russ and Laura did.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it was for the Scenic Bikeways. I know it's different than the one that was on last year's Film by Bike festival.
Yeah, and they are prolific.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, it's this Thursday coming up is when they have their event at Chris King.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're showing all of their videos for the Travel Oregon production, for the Oregon Scenic Bikeways, which we just spoke with them about. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can reference our last interview with them or go to their website.
Or just go there on Thursday.
Or
not that we're telling you to. You just, you know, if you wanted to, you could.
You could.
Yeah. The Bicycle Film Festival was cool. It was there was a nice smattering of films.
Yeah, it was a good variety.
I particularly enjoyed the one about the father who had lost his son to a bicycle accident.
I think that was my favorite.
They packed a lot of emotion into that film.
Yeah.
And well, it was well made.
And do you notice no dialogue?
No dialogue at all.
No dialogue in the entire film.
Yeah, but a lot of music. And again, a lot of emotion. And that was that actor that we should know the name of, right? But
right.
But it's all right. Anyways, it was
good. He's been in a lot of stuff. He's English, apparently, in Harry Potter. But okay. I've never seen any of those, so I couldn't even tell you what character played in that.
Yeah, and I'm also a bad wizard. I have not followed Harry Potter. Don't know a thing about it.
That's all right.
Yeah. Let's see. And also Lucas Brunel, whose film made an appearance
in
the festival.
Well, no, before we talk about that fucker, guy, person. Yeah. Sorry, that came out before I could censor myself. Before we talk about Mr. Brunel, filmmaker extraordinaire, we should also point out, like, there was the one film about the girls' BMX club. Really, I don't know. It's maybe a little sentimental or schmaltzy or whatever, but I just thought it was great.
Yeah. That was a great little documentary short kind of covering this group of ladies that's been doing BMX work. And obviously there's misogyny everywhere, but they've apparently had a really big, long uphill battle to get to where they are today.
Yeah. And they're all like really young too.
Yeah, yeah. But they were documenting, was it the first, what do you call it? Is it a 360?
So Simple Session backflip? Is like the thingity that, or the competition or whatever.
That's it,
People in the BMX world, please correct me. And then this was the first time that they were allowed to have their own session in the Simple Session.
Yeah.
Which, if you look up on YouTube, if you look up Sister Session, you'll find this actual film. And yeah, so it was like the first like 360 backflip.
Exactly.
Apparently. So by a female.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So then we saw the Lucas Brunel film about being an asshole in traffic, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Being an asshole all over the country and parts of the world. Basically every major city of the world, I think.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and being pulled in by the law enforcement authorities. And all filmed beautifully, we must say, by GoPro.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can't fault their production.
They're the equipment that you want if you want some piece of vanity, I guess.
I suppose so, yeah.
All that to say, I'm mounting a GoPro on my bike for this coming up trip, by the way.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I didn't know who this person was at first.
Before you went to the Bicycle Film Festival.
Right. And I actually didn't know who he was until, you know, after the Bike Film Festival. But so this guy apparently is just filming a lot of these alley cat races mostly.
Right. And
skidding through traffic and through people. And
having participated in the Cranksgiving Alley Cat, I can say that that's a great time. You should totally do it. It's not the alley cat that's the problem.
No, no.
It's the attitude.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole win at all costs.
Right. So the thing that
everything
bothers me
is it feels like everything is secondary to whoever is on the bike.
That's the thing that bothers me. Because you've got these people, like packs of cyclists, weaving through really tight spaces.
Really dense.
Right in front of pedestrians.
And, yeah.
You could hurt a person that was on foot. You could get hurt by a vehicle. You could cause another crash.
There was a clip where a guy got T-boned.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, which just seems totally unnecessary. No matter how much. What was the quote you found? Fuck bicycle advocacy?
Oh, yeah. Lucas Brunel in an interview, which, yeah, we could even link to that interview.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not making this shit up, but it was actually the last thing he said in that interview was like, fuck bicycle advocacy. We need cars and we need SUVs so I can skitch off them, basically.
Right, right. And skitching refers to
grabbing onto a piece of it and letting the car do the work, basically.
Right, right. So it's also cheating, I suppose you could say. Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk too much about it because obviously by now you know how we feel. We, of course, will let you, the listener, come to your own conclusions.
Please, come to your own conclusions.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying anything to the effect of like, you know, he should not be making films or any film that he makes should be boycotted. You know, they're exciting to watch. I'll give it that.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah. No, it was like watching Premium Rush. And I think when I watched that movie, you should see it sometime because I think you might enjoy it.
Okay.
Once you suspend, it's like any movie. If you're watching something fictional and you say, "Oh, this is just a story,"
right?
Because I had to dial down when I was watching it on the airplane on the way to Boston. I had to dial down the internal monologue that just said, "You're breaking the law."
Okay,
you're
and
breaking
that's the thing,
the law.
Right? And that's the thing that ruined that film for me.
Sure,
was Adele turning to me and saying, "This is why people hate cyclists."
Exactly.
And like all of
they're
these
not helping.
Right, right. And like all of like my limited experiences of interactions or less than ideal interactions with people in cars or whatever.
Right.
You know, like all get sort of piled into this same sentiment. And so, you know, I go from enjoying this film and just the action of it all. To like, they're breaking the law. Oh no, fuck these guys.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly.
They're assholes. So,
yeah. Well, and this is not helping anyone that's in the interested but concerned category.
True.
From any perspective.
True.
So that's all we'll say about that. Just before we go to our interview with the Icebeard, we did the shortest and longest Midnight Mystery Ride, as you called it.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun. The first time
at least in my experience. Like, I know there was a Midnight Mystery Ride that was, at least by intention, a camp out. I don't know if it actually got pulled off. I was there for, like, the bonfire part of it. I didn't stick around for the camping part of it.
But meant to be an overnight.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. This one, it was the first one I've done in a long time, partially because you have not had Fridays free from work for a while.
Right.
And partially
or Saturday mornings.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah. And both of those are very crucial to staying up after midnight.
Especially.
Yeah. And for me, it was just cold and I didn't really know if I would know anybody else. So, yeah.
You knew more people at this one than I did.
I suppose. Yeah.
People were coming up to you like and saying, "Hey, it's Brock from the Sprocket podcast."
Little embarrassing, I guess. But no, it was cool to meet some new people, hang out with some folks.
Yeah.
And we kind of met up with a crowd that. After the defining event of the night, I think we went and we were up for a good long while.
Yeah. So, yeah, the shortest in that we were at our destination for, what would you say, a half hour?
Something
maybe?
Like that, yeah. And because it was a mystery ride, we probably won't tell you where it was. At least not in this forum.
Yeah. But yeah, the fire marshals came and put out our little campfire, which that's all it was to me anyways, was
right.
A little campfire.
It was pretty small. Yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah.
But big enough to attract the attention of the neighbors.
And I mean, there was a good crowd. It was like the first nice night of the season. So there was a good crowd.
Do you have
too.
A guess on how many? Because I'm guessing like between 50 and 75.
I was
going to
say
like
50 right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy organizing it, by the way, super nice, endearing guy, handed out spoke cards to everybody.
Right.
Never happened on a mystery ride I've ever been on.
You still have yours. Mine disappeared.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I was a little tipsy by the end of the night.
Oh, it's maybe with your lenses.
Yes. Yeah, it's probably right next to the lens on my glasses. Yeah, that's gone.
So the fire marshals came like after a half hour and like put it out. And then
one police officer.
A few of us were still hanging out and we're like, okay, well, I guess we just will hang out without a fire. And then the cop that was there was like, no, you got to go.
Party's over.
You're out.
I think the exact words were party's over. Yeah. As far as I remember. So anyways, thanks to Kelly for inviting us in, giving us a nice place to hang out.
We were right near her place.
Yeah,
so
totally.
She let us hang out. And
it was a good time. The other Kelly.
Neighbor Kelly, right?
Exactly,
that's what she goes by.
Exactly. Friends with Twitterless Andy.
Right. So. Who I met last night.
Oh, okay. Good.
In my drenched out.
You probably noticed his lack of a handle.
Right. I had.
A Twitter handle, that is.
Right. I asked him, like, how do I look you up? because that's what I'm all about, too.
Right. Well, and you don't have Facebook. So basically, you two should never connect anywhere outside of the real world.
We couldn't.
No, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let's go to our interview with Phil B.
Yes.
Stands for beard, I think. Yeah. Multimodal Alaska Adventures right here.
Yukon Phil.
There we go.
Yukon Phil from Alaska.
From Alaska.
That's right.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us. So you are the author of the blog Multimodal Alaska Adventures, and you are a listener of our show. And I believe you met, we first interacted by you calling us out on what pansies we were.
Yeah, I remember something about that.
Because damn, it's cold down here in Oregon.
Yeah, wasn't it like 8 degrees?
You
guys were all whining about?
Well, I don't think it was quite that. I think it was...
It was
below freezing.
30? No, it hadn't quite dipped below freezing yet.
Oh, it hadn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was getting there.
All right. It makes more and more sense now in retrospect. Because, Phil, you're in Alaska.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're in Anchorage, is that correct? Or the area?
In the Anchorage area. We're actually reside in a place that is tenderly referred to as the Valley. It's where Valley Trash and Sarah Palin are from. So
okay.
That's where I be.
Fantastic. And Valley Trash is the company that comes through and picks up all your recyclables and everything one day a week?
That is one way to look at it, yes.
Okay. All right. Great.
I thought that was just an epithet for a certain kind of people.
Well, tell us, first of all, how long have you lived there?
Let's see. So I've lived in Alaska now since 2010, September of 2010. And I've lived up in the valley since June of this year.
Okay. And did you discover bicycling and transit there, or did it follow you from somewhere else?
Well, I started kind of seriously cycling in 2006 when I was in graduate school, but not for transportation. It was purely for fun, a way to to get away from all of the stress of trying to learn stuff. When we moved up to Alaska, we sold our second car just because we didn't want to try and, the logistics of bringing two vehicles up to Alaska just seemed beyond our scope at the time.
Sure. And you weren't going to trust it to drive away like Neil behind the wheel or anything.
Right. Yeah. And so when, the plan was originally that, I would give the whole bike commuting thing a try and maybe we'd pick up another cheap car to drive, on the days that I needed to. And it just quickly became just what I do. I just bike commute and have never thought about buying a second car.
Yeah. And you are, not only are you multimodal, you are all seasons as far as I can tell.
Yes. Yes. All seasons. Like I said, I started in September of 2010 bike commuting full time for the most part. In Alaska, September is late fall. So by October, mid-October, we had snow that year. And I think just kind of gutting it out that first few snows really just kind of made me realize, hey, I can do this no matter what the conditions throw my way. So just kind of kept going from there.
Yeah. And so, of course, the first question is, how did you become such a badass motherfucker?
Years and years of practice, and I think really a lot of it comes down to being a little bit stubborn.
Okay.
My first 2 years of bike commuting, even in the winter, was on a skinny tired bike, and when you get a dump of a foot and a half to 2 feet of fresh powder and you're still out there pushing your bike through the snow rather than riding it because it's too deep to ride, there's definitely that stubbornness there. And just being able to say, hey, you know what? I did it. Look at the conditions out here. And I still was riding my bike. So screw you all.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there's a little bit of that, I think, in anyone who enjoys kind of either bicycle touring, like that's kind of the only way that I'm competitive in any sort of sporting way, is saying, oh, hey, I'm doing a thing I didn't think I could do. But also kind of beating adverse conditions. I think, Aaron, you and I both have some of that. In fact, you, Aaron, just the other night, last night,
dealt
with rain like crazy.
I don't feel like it's fair me sharing this story.
But
it's
to
like,
be fair, your leather shoes are still soaked.
They are, and so are my gloves.
Yeah. So
it was pretty bad out as far as like just pouring down. I looked at the measurement and like it turns out it's only 0.7 inches.
But it all came at once.
But yes, it all came like within a half hour.
Right. But again, Phil, tell us that we're a little soft?
Honestly, I would. But to be honest with you, I would rather be riding in a blizzard than in rain.
Sure.
Rain is the worst.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What is the difference between the two, and how much do you get of each, I suppose, where you are?
It really varies. The first two summers that I was here, we got rain at least once or twice a week, and it was, sometimes was fairly significant amounts of rain. Then last summer, we went the entire summer without rain, and then the entire month of August, it poured pretty much every day.
Oh, wow.
So it's really hard to say, to give a definitive pattern here. Blizzard type conditions, we rarely get, or at least in my time here, we've rarely gotten that. We will get 2-3 weeks snaps where it's, well below zero. And then follow that up in the spring, with dumps of 1-foot to 2-foot of snow. That's, heavy, wet stuff, like what we got this past weekend. So definitely every day out there is a different set of conditions that you have to deal with.
Do you enjoy that?
I do. It's, the days when you've got, like this morning riding to work, there were a couple of places where I had to walk my bike because the snow was, so deep, it hadn't consolidated down yet to give a good riding base. Or you're pushing through 6 inches of heavy, wet snow and you're going 2 miles an hour, weaving back and forth all over the place and thinking to yourself, what the hell am I doing?
Right.
Those days aren't as much fun, but you get where you're going and, you walk into your office building, you got the big old set of beard sickles going and people look at you and they can't help but think, there goes a badass. So,
no kidding. Yeah. Is it okay if we share one of those photos of your beard?
Yes. Yeah,
all right.
That's absolutely.
Yeah, because cool. The one that you had, I believe, I'm trying to, it was 8 and 15, or it was negative 8 and negative 15.
0 and negative 14.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one at negative 14 is, that's pure ice.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It looks like if you did not defrost your freezer for a couple of years, that's what it looks like, basically.
Yes, yes. Now, this time of year, you get a different type of beard sickles. Now, and this is something that people don't realize. There are different phases to the year with your beard sickles. You have the early winter frosty, puffy ones. Now, this time of year where it's, 20 degrees or so and you're out riding for 3-4 hours, you get like the actual icicle type beard sickles, which usually have kind of a yellowish tinge to them, which isn't very attractive. But, they build up, they come down to your chest and you look like – I don't know, maybe like Jack Black playing Satan.
Okay, there we go. Which is not, he hasn't done that yet, has he?
I don't think so.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking Dave Grohl playing Satan in a Tenacious D video. So.
Oh, right. Sure. Okay, yes. There we go. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Although I'm not familiar. I'm going to have to educate myself hereafter. Yeah.
You should check it out.
Yeah, yeah. So are you the only one, Phil, or who else is bicycling up there?
That's the crazy thing is that while there's not a huge cycling, bicycling, commuting community, really. Well, no, I should take that back. There really is a fairly large bicycle commuting community, but most of them are what I would consider fair weather. They ride maybe Fridays during the summer, but even in the winter time. There rarely a day goes by that I don't see at least one other cyclist out riding as their commute. Guys on a lot of fat tire bikes, right. The folks up here love them. But even guys on skinnies with studs. I've seen a few guys riding cross bikes with studs on them. A couple of guys around town riding electric assist bikes. So, there is quite a few people who do it year round.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the electric assist in snowy conditions? Because I think of the similar problems you would have with a motorized vehicle, a traditional motorized vehicle of spinning out and such. Do you know any stories?
You know, I don't. I don't. I see one guy riding around, but I've only ever seen him on the streets themselves. So I'm thinking he sticks to the streets and away from the multi-use path system that we have in Anchorage, which is one of the best I've seen anywhere. You know, it's like 60 miles of groomed trail all winter long for bikes and skiers.
And you spend a lot of time on those.
Yes. Yeah. I'm out there, you know, 5 days a week, probably between my morning and evening commute, an hour a day, on a good day.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
And how wide exactly are your tires?
I've got 3.8 inch wide tires.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you ride?
I ride a 2012 Surly Pugsley.
Yeah.
Pugsley.
Yeah.
Snowblind white with the offset front and rear. It's a badass machine.
Yeah, yeah. Aaron's a big fan of Surly.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan, but I don't own any Surly yet. Someday I will. I remember the first time I saw a Pugsley. It was probably the same color you have, and I was so inspired, so entranced and enchanted by the size of the tires and what you could do with those that it's been somewhere in my soul ever since. I don't think about it all the time, but, you know, the grain of possibility is always there.
Yeah, there, you know, when I got the Pugsley, I had been looking at fat tires for a while, you know, mostly because I was a year-round cyclist and wanted to make things easier on myself. And I kind of went with a corporate bike shop, if you will, when I got it, but I was able to get it the day that I wanted it. And have just loved it ever since. I ride it year round, for my commute every day. A lot of folks look at me like I'm crazy all the time. In the summer, the folks on the skinny tires and, you know, and I'm keeping their wheel with my big fat tires, at least for the few first weeks of summer.
Well done.
yeah. And then they quickly, you know, get to where they're much, much better shape than I am. But,
so you're pacing with them as far as fitness is concerned. Like you've been in shape all year and they're kind of working their way up.
Right. Yep. Yep. And then they start dropping me and it makes me mad, but,
so it does.
But you know, I think it's the beard. It's the aerodynamics of that.
But you can't give it up, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, big fans of beards here.
Think of how many ounces could be cut if we just all shaved.
There is that. Giving up beer and losing the beer gut would also cut ounces.
Right, but those are almost non-negotiable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a recent post you put on your blog had an account of you going kind of knee-deep in some water, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The when that actually happened was last year.
Oh,
last
okay. Time. Okay.
And what spurred that was somebody on I think it was on mountain bike forums, on the commuter forum, asked the question, you know, at what point do you call a ride? You know, either you can't complete your ride for mechanical reasons or whatever. And it was, yeah, just in, what happened was it was the first fall that I had my fat bike. And one of the things that happens with the fat bike is you quickly realize that you can ride places that you've not been able to ride before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swampy areas, soft sand, that sort of thing. So I was riding in a swampy area that I had never been able to ride before. It was somewhat frozen over, not nearly as much as what I thought, and got to the point where you kind of make you come to the realization that I'm in over my head. I know that 2 miles this way I can get to a roadway, or I can backtrack 5 or 6 miles and hopefully get back to where I got into trouble in the first place. And this is right on the edge of Anchorage. So it's, you know, it's not out in the woods. It's not in the bush. It's right in town. And so made the decision, you know, 2 miles, I can make it. I'll just keep going ahead. I can see the power lines for the road. I'm just going to go that way.
And I would assume that Alaska's town is Oregon's bush in some ways.
Yeah, I think so. And just kind of got to the point where the ice was no longer holding me, and every step I took was splashing down into knee high and then thigh high water. In October, air temperature was, you know, mid 30s. Water temperature was right at freezing. And that was one of those times when I finally got to the road. You know, I called the wife and said, can you come pick me up? I can't feel my feet.
Right. And that's a point at which the combustion engine is very useful.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you made it out okay. Your toes are still all there?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. So I'm also curious about your interaction with transit. Now, you mentioned you have the Pugsley, and one of the big worries, I've never verified any of the dimensions, so I don't know. But one of my worries was that if I got a Pugsley, I might not be able to throw it onto a bus. It seems like you have no problem.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
So most bus bike racks do not accept the big tires. There are some bus systems I've heard. I think Minneapolis has upgraded theirs, which would make sense since they're released from there.
Right.
Salsa.
Oh, yeah.
So there are, you know, there are transit systems and options available to them that are, you know, they're starting to come up to speed with that. That said, in Anchorage, the Anchorage bus system is out of the picture for me because their bike racks don't accept the big tires and they won't let you bring the bike onto the bus.
Okay.
Now, the bus system that I ride every day from the valley to town is called the Valley Mover. It's a nonprofit system up here. And they actually allow me to bring my bike onto the bus. So I just wheel it right in, put it on the side right behind the driver, and away we go.
Very good. Is there a situation you can conceive of where they would not allow you to bring it in?
At this point, no. I know each morning there's two of us fat bikers that ride the bus that I'm on.
Oh, nice. You have a twin.
Yes.
Probably not with as good of a beard as you, though.
No, she doesn't have a good beard.
Okay.
If she did, I'd be awkward. there's a couple of other folks who ride the bus system with fat bikes. We have a couple of folks who are in wheelchairs. We've got times where we have even skinny bikes on the bus because the front rack's full. So they're really accommodating with, you know, trying to get everybody onto the system that wants to use it. There have been a few times where I'll wait for the next bus, you know, rather than taking my 4 o'clock bus, I'll take the 4:30 bus just because it's so full. I don't want to make other people uncomfortable by trying to shove the bike in. But the bus operators themselves do everything they can to make sure that they get everybody home when they want to be home.
That's pretty great. I think that's the difference between an urban transit system and a rural transit system, is that the urban transit system is developed with enough frequency in the lines and enough capacity on the vehicles that if you miss one, I mean, you might not get there when you want to, but you will get there in a reasonable amount of time. Rural systems oftentimes only run maybe two or three times a day on their route, depending on which one you're talking about. And so it is in their interest to make it work for the people who use it and depend on it. So that's kind of nice, actually.
Yeah. And that was when we decided to move up to the valley, that was one of the things that somewhat sold me on the idea, is I knew that I didn't want to give up bike commuting and I didn't want to drive, you know, even to the edge of town and then bike commute from there. So when I found out that the bus company would allow my bike onto the bus, that's when I said, okay, we can start looking for a house now.
That's fabulous. Yeah. So how long is your commute in total then, including transit?
Let's see. So I leave my house at no later than 4:40 a.m. And I usually walk through the doors at work at about 6:20.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not terrible. And of course, dry conditions where there's not snow is a little bit quicker on the bike piece of it. The bus ride itself is 40 to 45 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a significant commitment, but it's also something that you seem fairly committed to. What is it that kind of motivates you? I have some assumptions, but I'll let you explain.
Well, I'm cheap, first of all.
Okay, so you'd fit in well in Portland.
Yeah, well, you know, you fit in anywhere, really. yeah, so that is a big part of it. I'm fortunate in that one of my employers provides my bus ride for free. You know, so it costs me nothing but time to do my commute each day. And that time, it seems like there's a lot of time commitment there, but that time becomes productive for me. You know, I can use it to catch up on work. I do a lot of writing while I'm on the bus. I get caught up on my reading while I'm on the bus. You know, it was definitely a trade-off, moving to the Valley, being able to get a house that's appropriate for my family and the size of my family, while still being able to work in town. Why I chose the bus versus, you know, buying, you know, even a hybrid or some other high efficiency vehicle. You know, the driving myself would be just as much of a time commitment, if not more. The idea of a single person in a single car making a trip, you know, of 45 miles a day every day seems really asinine to me.
Yes.
You know, I drive way too, well, I shouldn't say I drive. My family drives way more than what I would like as it is. You know, and I think I get a pass on that because it's a five-person carpool there.
Sure.
You know, I think that's probably the biggest thing. It's just that one person, one car paradigm just doesn't mesh with my thinking. And just having the time to be able to think. You know, you ramp up for the day in the morning by, you know, working out those problems that were vexing you the day before at work, organizing what you need to get done that day. And then at the end of the day, you have the ride to completely decompress. And by the time you get home, you can be completely there for whatever you need to do at night. And I found that I'm kind of like a junkie that way. If I don't get my bike ride in, I get really antsy and really crabby really quickly.
Yeah, the difference between a day, and I'm sure, Aaron, you've probably felt this as well. I mean, you don't commute anymore because you live where you work, but
right.
But you need your rides as much as I do and as much as Phil does. And I would assume anyone else listening probably has a very similar feeling. It's like just the idea of getting exercise, being fit in some way or another, helps a lot. It goes way towards your mental state. And if your job, like mine, involves a lot of sitting around, or in your case, Aaron, you just kind of being in one place a lot
sure.
of the time.
Sure.
It helps to have been out and gotten away from kind of the bustle and kind of clear your head a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as cycling specific, and I'm sure runners probably experience the same, but there's just something kind of zen-like about, like, you've got this rhythm going, and once you've got your pace, you know, your body's moving at this constant set of motion and speed, and you're breathing in this sort of constant motion or this constant rhythm, that it really, for me anyways, like, you work out so much unconsciously that you're not even, you know, aware, like, you're not coming up with any, like, problems or solve big solutions to your problems, but you have, I don't know, like, maybe a different outlook on things than you used to.
Yeah. And Phil, you're no stranger to deep thought. You've got a bunch of really insightful thoughts on your blog, and also some poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. Once upon a time, I thought I was going to be a poet, and then I got real.
Well, it seems the evidence would support that you are, in fact, a poet. So I'm not going to argue with that, but... But no, I love the fact that, like you're saying, like it seems like this rumination time is good because you're coming up with, you're working through stuff. So thank you for putting that out there.
Yeah. It is an amazing thing to just have that time where you don't have, you know, when you're at work, you have all of these responsibilities. You know, when you're at home, you have all of these responsibilities. When you're driving a car, you have, well, hopefully you should have all kinds of responsibilities.
You should be aware of these responsibilities.
Whether or not you're behaving responsibly.
Right. But on a bike, particularly in my situation where 90% of my ride is on separated pathways that if they interact with traffic at all, it's going on an underpass and you might hear a car going overhead at the same time. It really gives you a chance to just kind of get into that Zen place and really let your mind go wherever it wants. And some cool, sometimes scary stuff comes out of that.
Right. But it's better than being plugged in, I guess, to use the Matrix analogy. Once you take the blue pill or the red pill? I forget. But once you take the pill and you kind of slide out of the system, you can't imagine being back in because it seems so confining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I am curious. You mentioned obviously having a family, and I think most people that consider a 2-hour commute each way would say, but I need that time to be with my family. So it seems like that isn't a big issue for you.
No. I think...
And you referenced earlier that, like, by the time you get there, you have all your alone time that you've needed, and so you're prepared to kind of interact with other people again.
Exactly. And the fact that, you know, I start my day so early, I'm able to come home, you know, at a decent time. By the time I get home at the end of the day, it's 6 o'clock or so. So then, you know, we sit down and have dinner. Kids are done with all of their activities. You know, we've got that time to talk and bond, and because of the way I've got my schedule set up, I get to take most Fridays off. So that gives me additional time to be with them and you know, enjoy their company. So it's been, you know, by Thursday it's a bit of a struggle.
Sure.
But you know, I've made the choices so that I do have that extra time that I can spend with them you know, and kind of get in my own personal time where, yeah, if I wasn't doing the bike commute thing, I would have to take some time during the week to exercise and take time away that, you know, from them that I would otherwise have.
Yeah. And you have your weekends because you need your weekends.
Exactly.
I would assume. So tell me a little bit about daylight, because obviously that close to the poles, it works out a little bit differently than it does, at least for us down here in the continental states.
Yeah. So right now we are in probably my favorite time of the year to ride. And March is just gorgeous up here for outdoor activities. So we've gone from, you know, starting about September is when you really start noticing the days getting really short. By mid-November, we're looking at, you know, sunrise at 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, sunset at 3:30, 4 in the afternoon, which is cool in its own right. But by the time the solstice comes around, you're ready for more sun. And now we're facing almost 12 hours a day of sunlight. You know, the sun rises around 8-ish, maybe a little bit earlier. And right now, I think last night when I was trying to go to bed about 8:30, it was still so bright out that, you know, I could see to read a book in bed if I wanted to. So you've got these really widely varying light conditions. You know, summer, we do get sunlight, not quite 24 hours, at least in Anchorage and the area. But you can be out at 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of June and not have to have any lights on at all. It's kind of a twilight situation.
That's something else.
Yeah, it's it definitely drives the way people live up here. During the summer, during the light, as we say, you run and do as much as you possibly can, in that time. And then when it gets into the dark, you do, you know, a lot of people still spend a lot of time outdoors skiing and, other activities, but, you also find a lot of people who just kind of hunker down and watch a lot of movies, drink a lot of beer. Yeah.
It reminds me of Portland again, but again, we are softer than you are up there. I think we are not nearly as well prepared to deal with it. I think if you took the average Portlander and put them in Alaska, they would fall apart.
I think maybe. I'm
for
thinking
all
of
those
that,
reasons.
that skid on Portlandia where the winter and they have like the one little spotlight of sun.
Yes.
They're all chasing it throughout the entire city.
Yeah.
It's over there.
They're a bunch of pansies, man. You know, up here, we just, you know what? Take your sunlight. We don't care. We're still going to go out there and have a good time.
And I rue the day that I would say that Portlandia is accurate, but I think it might be.
I would say the sentiment behind that skit, yes, anyways, is certainly rings true.
They hit that nail on the head. Yeah. So first of all, maybe in closing, to your fellow Alaskans, what would you say?
To my fellow Alaskans, I would say those of you who aren't biking should be. Those of you that are biking, you make me look like a pansy. And I would like to call myself an Alaskan, but I'm not quite there yet. I mean, I think it's 10 years you have to be here before they'll finally say you're an Alaskan.
Okay.
So I'm an Alaskan in training. I'm trying to get my badass wings, but got to work on it day by day.
Yeah. And you're already well on your way to being local. You've been there long enough to be local. So at some point you will establish yourself even more permanently than that.
Yeah.
All right. How about people that are not from Alaska but would like to try bicycling there?
I think it's kind of like that old adage about New York. If you can make it here on a bicycle, you can make it anywhere on
there
a bicycle.
Yeah.
The thing is there is some amazing places to bike up here, whether you're into road biking, touring, mountain biking. We've got it all. We've got multiple long distance road races that take place throughout the summer. We have multiple long distance endurance winter races like the Iditarod Invitational, the Susitna 100. So lots of different opportunities there. We've got people who fly up to Dead Horse, which is the end of the road system in the United States. It's the furthest north you can go.
Very cool.
Then ride down. So there's just all kinds of opportunities for cycling. And of course, Alaska is such a huge land and just so amazingly beautiful that you're never going to get bored if you come up here to bike.
Excellent. I also wanted to reference just real quickly, we don't have time to get into it in full, but you recently saw someone wearing Google Glass and had some great ruminations on technology and do we need it or not? So maybe what don't you need to live in Alaska?
I don't think you need a cell phone. You don't need... a car definitely helps, but you don't need one. You don't need a snow machine. You don't need a four-wheeler. You don't need anything powered by gas. You need an axe and a bike, a beard, and a bit of an adventurous attitude. And I think that's the most important thing, is just being willing to try anything.
Excellent. And willing to try, and that tenacity probably counts for a beard if you can't quite muster one.
Well, I think if you've got that type of tenacity, it's going to come in.
Okay, there we go. Regardless of who you are.
You're going to will that beard to grow.
That's right.
All right. Excellent. Well, is there anything else you wanted to throw in before we say goodbye?
Just thank you for all of the many hours of great work that you guys have done. It makes my commute go that much better when I listen to you guys. And I'm sure people, that I pass on the street look at me like I'm crazy as I'm laughing out loud. But, the work that you guys do, I think, is helping other people fulfill their own dreams.
Oh, so, shit. We've gone bright red.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Well, thank you.
All right. Say hi to Russia for me.
Right.
I will. I'm actually looking at Putin right
now. Okay, perfect.
Shirtless on his horse.
That's right.
Oh, the website is Multimodal Alaska Adventures, and we'll put a link up to that. multiakadventures.blogspot.com?
That's correct.
All right.
Excellent. And if I can get in one more quick plug, I'm also writing a weekly article for alaskacommons.com. It's called the Beardsicle Chronicles. It's kind of an offshoot of the blog, a little bit more political, a little bit more... focused on the inequalities of transport.
Okay.
So. Oh, intriguing.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you. We'll also search that out and link that up as well. Seriously, thank you so much for taking the time. I know, obviously, with 4 hours of commuting, you're like the Dr. Jeff of Alaska, really.
I'm trying to get there.
No, but we really appreciate everything you're putting out there. It's really inspiring to hear people that are doing things that are unconventional, and that just means a lot. So thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Doing good work, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Well, say hello to everybody we don't know.
I will do that.
All right. Have a great night.
Cool. Take care, guys.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Are we back?
And we're back, folks.
Excellent. Thank you again, Phil, for the interview. And how about some headlines?
Let's do it.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights. Pedals just as fast as it can into the morning.
All right. From Bike Portland, Oregon State Parks unveils bike pod facility plans for bicycle travelers looking to take bicycle tourism to the next level, and to solidify the direct connection between bicycling and economic development. Oregon State Parks wants to create a network of covered bike facilities they say will redefine the cycling experience. The Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, OPRD, call these facilities bike pods and bike hubs. I like bike hubs.
Bike hubs.
And if all goes according to plan, there will eventually be 19 of them throughout the state, with the first one set for construction this summer.
Which leaves only 18 to go.
It's a good start. That's great math, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
The city of Mosier has been a leader in supporting this effort, and they appear to be the first city that will receive on the hubs. They've already budgeted for its repair and maintenance in their 2014 budget. A pod at Shampooey State Park is also in advance planning stages.
And if you follow our link to the article, there are some great graphics of what these are going to look like. The included lockers for storage of stuff.
Oh, sweet.
Especially for
like
food.
Like bear boxes.
Yeah. They've got this bear box type thing. It looks like, and I don't know if all of these will be at every one, but there's also a pole that's tall enough to hang your food from if needs be. And then also some bike tools that are attached. And this one here, I believe this is the overnight that we have this picture of, we're looking at now.
Yeah.
It has a covered area.
And
which
a
means,
repair stand.
Right. So you can set up your tent, but there's also additional coverage, especially if it's wet. And if you've been out on the road, and I mean, you and I, and we've all done a lot of bicycle touring over the past couple of years, just kind of going from place to place, it's nice to find a space that is, in fact, your own, as opposed to having to like be tucked off in like an extra campsite somewhere or a place they had to create kind of like next to the dumpsters or something.
Right.
That's dedicated space for bicycle travelers.
That's kind of been the case for a lot of like biker specific campsites is like,
yeah,
oh shit, we gotta put it somewhere.
Exactly. You know? Might as well be here
let's
next to the trash
move,
cans.
Yeah. Let's just move the dumpsters 10 feet further this way.
Yeah, exactly. So exciting news anyways, and
yeah,
look forward to seeing this happen.
One thing that really excited me, that reminds me of this, is when we went to Stubb Stewart and there was that whole repair stand.
Yeah.
Already.
Which is new built. Since we had been there before, I think.
Yeah, it's new this year, I think.
Yeah, and that was up by the ranger station?
Yeah.
Kind of by the central check-in area?
Yeah.
First thing you get to when you go into the park by car.
So it could be like the thing you do like once you arrive or like the thing you use like right before leaving.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. Depending on how motivated you are to deal with your bicycle troubles.
We didn't use it at all. Ah, good effect.
Thank you.
From Amtrak, recycling facilities are being added to bi-level trains. We've been working to solve our onboard recycling challenge, and we're excited to announce we've made some important steps.
This is Amtrak corporate speaking right now.
The first Superliner coach car, which travels outside the East Coast, left our biggest maintenance facility recently outfitted with new permanent recycling receptacles on board and ready for your empty bottles, papers, and other recyclable materials. When we first heard your complaints about the lack of recycling options on board, we figured it would be an easy fix. Since then, we've learned a lot about Food and Drug Administration and Federal Railroad Administration rules related to the bins that we wanted to install. With earlier prototypes, We also noticed that passengers liked the bin's flat tops so much that they were using them as workstations for their laptops, blocking other customers' access to the top of the cans. We're wiser now. The new bins we're installing are safely secured to the train, have rounded edges as an extra precaution, and even have sloped tops to discourage laptops.
So three things, mostly related to what they just mentioned here. Number one, it is surprisingly difficult to recycle your stuff, even on a train set up with recycling facilities. They're not everywhere. So it's great to know that they're kind of expanding that, because recycling, as much as you want to do it, is oftentimes terribly inconvenient. And
yes,
an empty beer can that's going to smell like stale beer for the rest of the trip is not something you want to put back into your bag.
Right, right. Like,
well, not saying it came from my bag, because that would be wrong. That's not, I would never do that. If you bought it from the concession, you want to be able to put it in a place where you, where it'll be recycled, but also not contaminating anything else.
Right. I mean, as far as recycling goes, or like, I don't know, anything of that realm, it's only going to work so long as it's more convenient than sort of the default action.
Right, you know? Right.
Same with like a car-free lifestyle. You know, that's only going to work so long as you can make it more convenient than, you know, driving a car.
Exactly, yeah. Unless you have the tenacity of Phil Beard.
Right.
So, yeah. And then lastly, are you ready to get your ire up? Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. There was one more thing.
Yeah.
Don't be a dick. Don't put laptops on top of the recycling bins.
Yeah.
That means you're standing in the aisle.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Which is dumb.
See, I was going to give a little bit of leeway and say, like, you know, I could understand, like, maybe you don't want to be in the dining car or whatever while you're working on your laptop, and you don't want your laptop on your lap.
Right.
But
for reproductive reasons.
Right, of course. And I could see that. I was going to give some leeway. But in the meantime, yeah, be open to moving your laptop so that people can get at the recycling bins.
Right.
But then again, yeah, if you're standing in the aisle, then that negates any kind of leeway I would give.
Yeah.
So don't stand in the aisle, Drake.
Right. And lastly, just rounded corners means no more getting workman's comp from Amtrak, apparently.
That's right.
I would hate to be the person that got cut on the edge of a recycling bin. That's like the opposite of good.
That's true.
So.
All right. from Oregon Live, did Top Gear go too far with bicycle safety spoofs? Yes, the Auto Obsessive International series on which Motormouth host Jeremy Clarkson has referred to bicycling as a silly Victorian distraction. Oh, I'm sorry. That was the worst.
That was kind of jarring. That's okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry, British listeners.
And any other imperial possession.
Yeah. Yes. And encouraged pedaling commuters to grow up and buy a car, decided to commit an entire episode to human-powered wheels. As part of the episode, Top Gear produced a series of very cheeky parody ads poking fun at bicycle commuters' tendency to run red lights, self-righteousness, and Peter Pan syndromes, among other things. You know, I'm going to pause here for a second. The phrase Peter's Pan syndrome comes up. I have no context for that.
Oh, what it means?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is where we pull back the curtain and say, we're actually reading this from a screen. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So
But
this is the writer for Oregon Live, and
I can fly.
I guess I don't know. I'm
or,
just maybe critiquing
I'll never grow up.
The writing.
Yeah.
In that, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm the ignorant one, but I think you need to have a little bit more context for what Peter Pan syndrome is.
Oh, true. Right. The good writing in this article is that he called the host a motor mouth because
this
it's an auto obsessive international series. That is kind of funny.
Okay.
We'll give him that.
Back to the script here.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, bicyclists the world over are voicing their dismay and frustration at the Top Gear segment, saying it further promotes a pointless cars versus bike narrative with childish humor.
Yeah, and so there's the one that sticks out in my mind is the one where it's like a bunch of grown-ups in business suits playing on playground equipment. And at one point, someone shows up on a bicycle, behaving childishly.
Oh, kind of looking so that like, might be part of the whole Peter Pan syndrome.
Maybe that's it. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was just like all of these were painted so ridiculously. These are the worst straw man ads ever to be put out. But all of them were just like, yeah, basically the idea is grow up, buy a car.
Right, which is what,
or as the British voiceover talent said, get a car with disdain.
I see.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, my first instinct was to be like, you know, hey, let's just be able to laugh at ourselves.
Right. And I assume I assume this was not produced with like an actual anti-bike sentiment. I assume they're playing up the fact that this is Top Gear talking about bikes.
Yeah. But, and yeah, that's the thing. Like, so it's Top Gear.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's a show about cars around like centered around people who are already obsessed with cars. Like,
right. Can we turn this around? Talk about fucking cars.
What harm are they going to do to the bicycle industry? Like, what person who's interested in cycling is watching Top Gear and going, all right, no, they're right. Fuck this bicycling bullshit.
Right.
I'm selling my Pugsley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. Yeah. And again, there's some spoofing going on.
Sure.
And so, there was a great response ad with, I believe, a naked cyclist.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It said, you know, check your mirrors. You never know what you're missing. Basically was the message.
I.e. drive safer.
Yeah, exactly. Start seeing naked bicyclists. If you need to bring up some compassion, envision them naked.
And then here's another thing that I'm just going to rant about for just a little bit here.
Yes.
I wish I had the numbers to actually back me up, because this was something that really got under my skin. This whole sentiment that cycling is dangerous.
Oh, you know? Sure.
Cycling. Yeah. I hope you're wearing a helmet out there because it's dangerous. Like, granted, people generally buckle up pretty much automatically whenever they're behind the wheel these days. Mostly because it's the law, but it wasn't always that way. I grew up at a time in which it wasn't.
And our parents' generation, I mean, us as like sort of middle-aged adults, like our parents' generation grew up where that really wasn't a thing. That wasn't a message.
It hadn't been messaged yet. Not at all. Thank you, Ralph Nader.
That's right.
But anyhow, so cycling is so dangerous. But looking at the hard numbers, and here's where I wish I had the actual numbers in front of me.
Sure.
To back it up. But traffic fatalities are still way more common than cycling fatalities, like by a lot.
Sure. Motor vehicles cause a little more carnage than bicycles do.
Yeah. And... yeah, it's one thing. I've had people like sort of tell me like ride safe out there or whatever.
Oh yeah, I get that all the time from well-meaning coworkers.
Yeah. Oh no, it's totally well-meaning.
I always turn it around and say, you too. You know, be safe out there on the road. You too.
I've begun to, in all jest, of course.
Oh yeah,
but I've begun to just say safer than driving.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because
just
it is.
So they know that we're not Peter Pan, neither you nor me.
No.
Yeah. And maybe what we could do is just take all of these little PSAs that they made, put them into a bundle, and shove them right in front of Lucas Brunel.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
And he'd say, that's what I'm talking about.
You know, you could just take one of Brunel's films and then, like, put the voiceover guy at the end.
Does that count as original material by that time? I've altered it enough.
Under fair use?
Yeah.
At least in America. As I understand, British fair use is far different, if maybe non-existent. Anyways, how about some mail?
Let's do some mail.
All right.
Let's get some positivity up here.
Seriously.
Hey, we got mail.
Oh, hey. Can I do an old mail?
Sure.
Related to our news, Steve in Wyoming, back in the day, sent us something from Top Gear. It was James May who was talking about bicyclists, did a little column on them. And his problem was not with any sort of law abiding or not abiding, just that the fact that people that were all decked out in Lycra didn't wave. Too serious all the time.
Too serious.
Yeah.
That's because they're in all those tight clothes.
That's right. Well, they're uncomfortable.
They're uncomfortable.
Yes. Their sensitive bits are compressed.
Wear jeans.
Yeah. So, hey, what else do we have this week?
All right. Hey, we got physical mail.
That
again.
We do. Yeah, it's right over there on the speaker.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
From Rory in Michigan. Rory made us a custom six-pack holder. Out of scrap wood, out of found wood, wood.
Yeah, remaining wood, unused wood.
Yeah, and a
supplementary
and a little Michigan wood. Magnet.
Yeah,
which I
also
have,
made of supplementary.
I have
wood
on my refrigerator,
which is great. I realized when I put it up on my refrigerator that I didn't know how to orient the two parts of Michigan, the two separate magnets, you know. And I was just like, "Well,
oh no, that's funny because
you put it up here, and then this part touches Iowa, right? Which is flat, yeah.
Right? Because yeah, I originally put them on my refrigerator like correctly, and then they get like moved around and messed
up. Right.
And so I'll see it the next time I see it, it's moved around, and I'll like reorient it.
And DUP ends up being like one of the Great Lakes or something,
right? Yeah. Right. Or like up in Canada, or so yeah, I'll reorient it, and then like I'll come back, you know, some other time, like a day later or something, and then it's like all screwed up again.
I swear, Michigan gets no respect.
I think I know where I'm supposed to put these guys.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you so much, Rory.
Yeah.
We'll be using these all the time.
And Jolene on Facebook. This was the first time I listened to your Sprocket podcast. It was great. I will definitely listen to future shows.
Woo.
My takeaway was how to pronounce Velocult. So it's Vel-O-Cult.
Rhymes with Jell-O-Cult.
I'm from the South, North Carolina, but live in Eugene.
Still in the South from here.
I have to say Velocult. Lols.
Lols. Excellent. Well, everyone has a regional dialect, except the Pacific Northwest, which has none.
Right.
That's a lie.
I know. Yeah. Like, no, every region says that. I grew up hearing that in Michigan.
Right, right.
And everybody knows, like, I don't have an accent.
Exactly, yeah. And apparently I sound like a Dakotan sometimes.
Oh, really?
Sometimes.
Huh. No.
Dakota.
You'd have to say Dakota.
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 I'm trying.
Right.
I think it comes out more naturally other times when I'm not thinking about it.
Of course, like all I know about the Dakota like accent is from Fargo.
Or so. from Garrison Keillor.
Oh.
Related, not the same.
No.
To take no offense, anyone out there. Yeah.
Anyhow, Tim in DC, like paying out to put car to go in a garage.
And two pictures of a city bike from DC.
Ah.
Locked up with a U-lock.
Nice. Nice.
Which, of course, the system is not necessarily designed to work that way. So
kind of defeats the purpose.
So it goes. Robert C. Iowa.
Wait a minute. Let's just go back.
Oh, yeah.
You have a Car2Go membership.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What would happen if you put that in someone's garage?
Well, it's got GPS, so eventually they would find it.
Right.
Yeah. I think the tricky part
like
is
someone's going to log in to look for like their Car2Go.
And they don't care where
knocking on your door.
They don't care where you put it as long as you leave it like signed in. As long as you're paying for it.
Right.
That's fine. You could park it anywhere. But if you try and like sign out and then keep it in a garage, they'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure. All right. Back.
They have
back
technology
to business.
And stuff.
So Robert C. dispels the notion that Iowa is flat. In fact, it's not even in the top 10 flattest states.
Flattest is Florida.
Florida.
Yeah.
However, Iowa is number 13.
Right. So it's pretty close to flat. It's pretty close.
But it's not in the top 10.
Okay. Well, easy enough.
As a postscript, he adds, how about a discussion on the show about whether a trip that starts in Portland and goes to Boston counts as cross country? I'd say start in Astoria.
That's what Robert says. I've already been to Astoria several times, both by car and by bike. And I don't know. We only have so much time. I don't want to take a bunch of time like going to Astoria and then coming back from Astoria and then actually starting what I would consider to be the beginning of my trip. I think a lot of it depends on if you've been there before or not.
It's like going around the block to drop off your friend who lives just up the street.
Right, right. But depending on who that friend is and if you're into that friend, you might be going around the block just to hang out with them a little bit longer.
I'm not.
Okay. Okay. Well, there we go. So you and Astoria clearly are not going out. No backseat romance for you two.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Well, even on top of that, though, I don't know if I said this recently or not, but I think of Matt Piccio and his whole trip across the country because he did not make it all the way to the ocean.
Oh, that's right.
No. He stopped midstream, and it was because he did what he had set out
to
do.
He did everything. Yeah, everything he wanted.
And he's like, you know, if I keep on doing this, it's just gonna suck. So at that point, he came home. So I think that's kind of my thing. So technically, yes. If I don't go from coast to coast, I did not bike all the way across the country in one fell swoop.
Well, and there was even some discussion, and correct me if I'm wrong, between you and Dell of like even opening the possibility of like maybe we won't even make it to Boston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's the thing is that we are setting out to do a bike trip that we will enjoy. And if it turns out we're out in Dakota and, you know,
nice.
Rolling Hills, or if we get to Iowa and we find out it's not flat. Fuck this.
We're turning around.
I'm taking the bus. Something like that. I don't know. It's basically like, you know, if we get somewhere, we find that we've only got like a week left, then, you know,
sure,
trip's over. Sure. I have to go back to work. So,
but on a related note, my roommate Sean bike to the coast.
Oh, right.
Before going all the way.
Well, he biked across. All the way across the country.
Yeah.
He's a real, cross continental.
That was part of
journey.
His, idiom, I guess,
cool.
He was going for.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody has their own. And for me, I've never been excited about putting my wheels into salt water. So, which apparently is the tradition.
Right, right. That's you got to dip it in the water. Dip your back wheel in the West Coast.
Right. And then your front
then
wheel.
Your front
what
wheel
happens if you do it in reverse by accident? You get like the front wheel in Astoria and then you go across the country to the East Coast and then you put your back wheel in there. It's like you did the whole thing backwards.
Right. I think what happens then is the two coasts end up switching.
Oh. This is where continental drift comes from.
Right.
It's from all the people who did it wrong.
You're gonna cause the Cascadia subduction earthquake if you do that.
Well, at least the DRT will have trained us all well.
this is also
disaster
true.
Relief trials, everybody. Coming up
coming
this
up in July.
Just
July.
So you know.
July.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Excuse me. It was in June last year.
Yep.
Brother Dan.
Oh.
Your
hey,
brother
look,
Dan.
My brother mailed us. I didn't realize this.
Yeah.
Enlightens us on the history of daylight savings time. The idea of daylight savings time was first conceived by Benjamin Franklin in 1784 during his stay in Paris. He proposed to economize the use of candles by rising earlier to make use of morning sunlight.
Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
And he doesn't
Thomas
use
Jefferson.
As much candles.
Wait, okay. Johnny K showed us this bike fisherman thing. Which is cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Little thing.
I talked to, because Russ and Laura, like in that interview, we talked about riding your bike with your fishing poles.
Yeah. And Russ.
He's got a little container.
Russ packs his up, I think, into a case and, you know, bundles it up with the rest of his stuff. If
sure.
you are staying somewhere near a river, you just need the bike to get to the river and back to wherever you're staying. This little bike fisherman thing appears to do pretty well. You drop the butt end of your pole into the receptor there.
Yeah.
And it sits right by your back wheel.
Take that, Ron Popeil.
That's right.
With your pocket fisherman. Jamie on bus routing. Speaking of Oakland, there are both mostly north-south and east-west bus routes here. They do make a few detours on parallel streets, but tend to stay on the direction course. What I really wish is that transit agencies did a better job of helping you figure out the parallel routes that will also get you to your destination. At a higher frequency, over different hours, etc. The transit system maps are very line-focused and not destination-focused. Transit map reading should be required to graduate middle school.
Seriously, I like this idea quite a bit.
I was shocked that you got my pronunciation right. That never happens.
Yeah. Well, Jamie is not spelled like Jamie, as
oh,
you would think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was just a guess, so I think we did okay.
Yeah, I actually just by instinct said it that way. I didn't even think about it.
Excellent.
And lastly, Dan from Tennessee writes in. Apparently, we influenced his decision to relocate to Portland.
Yeah, we're not exactly to be faulted for it, but we had something to do with it.
What was the subject line was like, thank you for inspiring me to move to Portland.
Kind of. Well, maybe he only kind of moved to Portland. He like lives in Tigard or something. Who knows? We love you, Tiger. You have a Wes. We don't have a Wes over here.
That's true. We don't.
So anyways, we got to have a beer with him sometime. Or I will have a beer and you will have a ginger ale.
I will have, some sort of fancy soda.
And again, be you from Portland or from elsewhere, get in touch. If you want to hang out with us, we are around.
Yeah. And
it's not like we have
again,
free time all
we'll
the time.
We'll be in San Fran on the 22nd.
That is true, yeah. Well, hey, this has been a good show. Let's go.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics or guests. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call in, leave us a message, or text us to where you want to meet us on the West Coast at 503-847-9774.
Good idea.
Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Hertbird for our headline sounder. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard, Roger Grisby, and Wayne Norman.
All right. Ride fat.
Go to bed.
Yeah, we're doing our thing where you're not going to hear us as nicely as we sound through our microphones because technology. I think his Skype picture has a bike on it.
Hey there.
Hey, Phil.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I am doing well.
You sound great.
Are we doing headline music?
Yes, we are.
Oh.
But we're not back yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm just starting just in case.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I was kind of waiting for you.
Why aren't you running the show right?
Then I thought, like, maybe you're waiting for me to, like, go in.
No, we're good.
Okay. Everything's all right.
Yeah. I didn't give you any sort of cue. If I was a good co-host, I would be like, and now.
And now, the credits. Let's do this. Oh, let's not.
Sprocket Studios production.